Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Before we welcome our guest today, I want to pass on some disturbing casino news that comes out of Colorado. We'll be talking to Bob Nersessian about this next time he's on. But for now, the information comes from a local Denver television station. In Colorado, any credits left on a machine, or tickets or chips abandoned in a casino, are technically the property of the casino. While it is probably the law in Nevada as well, it is enforced more rigorously in the Centennial State. A player who saw $2 in credits left on a machine near him went and played off the credits. The next time he went in and inserted his card, he was soon surrounded by security and state gaming agents. He was taken upstairs and informed that he had stolen two whole dollars from the casino, and they had the evidence on tape. The player tried to return the $2, but instead was issued a citation. Court records show he had to pay $250 in fines, plus pay for his own FBI criminal background check and fingerprinting, pay for probation services, perform at least 24 hours of community service, and ban from all casinos in the state for a year. Apparently, this is business as usual in Colorado casinos. So, Richard, what's the most you've stolen from a Colorado casino?
Zero. I have not stolen any money from a Colorado casino. It's just mind-boggling to me how little they understand that it's a customer service business. And if you treat people like that, it can't be good for your business. But it just never ceases to amaze me how stupid people who run casinos are.
All right. On a much happier note, today, Richard and I welcome two lovely ladies to our show. Rosanna, Travis, and Joe have been Advantage players for several years. This is the first of a two-parter with these two ladies. Joe and Rosanna, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
In order to get started, let's look at how each of you got started playing cards and how that morphed into becoming APs. Joe, you first.
In about 2003, I was driving, and my friend Amy, who was studying astrophysics at the time, she called me. She's a very calm person, so when I heard enthusiasm in her voice, I said, "What's going on? Is everything okay?" She said, "Joanna, how would you like to make money doing the thing that you love the most, which is playing cards?" I was very interested in cards since I was very little, and I said, "What do you mean?" And she proceeded to tell me that her roommate was, in fact, not a drug dealer, because she thought that he was. He had way too much cash, that way more than normal, laying around. And she finally confronted him, and he admitted that he was not a drug dealer, but he was an Advantage player in the game of blackjack. One thing led to another, and Amy said, "I know the perfect person if you are recruiting for this team." And next thing you know, I was practicing like crazy. And do you want to hear after that anything that happened, how I actually
either now
got...
or later. Okay. But we're definitely going to talk about all those things. But for now, let's how
okay.
you got started.
That's then... how.
Very yeah. good. Rosanna, how about you? What happened to you?
Well, a similar thing happened to me, but this was actually Joe that recruited me.
So it's her fault.
It is her fault. I actually had not ever really gambled in my life. I had no interest in it. I'd actually seen a little bit of the dark side of gambling from, you know, just going to Vegas as a, you know, for entertainment reasons and with friends that gambled. And I just thought it was silly. And the only thing you could do was lose money at a blackjack table. And one day, so I was in grad school, and Joe called me one day, and we were talking about, you know, I was a struggling student and I needed money, as always. And
at Stanford, we should point out, struggling student
and,
at Stanford.
Well, no, this was, I was in Arizona at that time.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And
those Pac-10 schools are all alike.
I know,
alike.
Yeah. Two different schools. So we were talking, and I was saying how I, you know, I needed to find a job to support my school. And she said, well, I have the perfect thing. And again, sort of similar to how she talked to Amy, she said, you know, how would you like to make money gambling? And I said, okay, well, that's not really for me. I'm not a gambler. And plus, I just told you I don't have any money. And she said, well, you know, you wouldn't have to use your own money. And I know these people, and they have this system for beating blackjack. And so now it's started to sound even more shady, right? It was just,
Think she was on drugs?
A little bit, but I mean, she and I had been close for a while. So I, you know, she's always coming up with a little bit of a crazy story, and it always turns out to be true, everything she tells me. So I heard her out,
you're not telling her enough good stuff.
Right. So I said, well, okay, what's the catch? You know, I wouldn't have to use my own money. These people have a team. They have a system, so-called system. And she said, well, all you have to do is play using their system, and all you have to do is pass the test.
It's that easy.
And again, she made it sound, she's a good salesperson. She made it sound like it was so easy. And if I had known what actually went into learning how to count cards and beat blackjack, I probably would have just hung up on her right there and not done it, because I was, you know, I had a lot going on. I was in school, and but I decided, you know, she said, if worst comes to worst, you know, you and I get to actually see each other, because we don't live in the same city and we were still friends. And she said, you know, the worst that can happen is you'd come up with some good stories, you know, out of it. I promise you, you'll have some good stories at the end of this, even if you never play a hand in a casino. And she was right. Just going out there and meeting all of the characters that were on the first team we were on was pretty amazing. But I had no idea what to expect when I started, and it took me a long time to actually pass those tests.
I think it's sometimes better not to really know
how. What you're getting into.
Yeah, it is. So that's why you were challenging.
That's why you lied to her. Is that right?
I didn't. I think I was new to it. Had I not been?
She was fairly new. She'd been playing a few months, I think. But
yeah, I didn't.
But she definitely didn't give me all the details. She basically told me, she gave me a chart with basic strategy on it, and she told me, you know, the
different colors.
Yes, and no, I don't even think it was in color. I think it was in black and white. It just had like the words, and she gave me, it was one page, and then she told me the basics of the high low count, and she said, you know, practice counting down a deck, practice basic strategy. And I didn't have anyone to practice with. I didn't have anyone dealing to me. I was just by myself in my free time, and that was, so I came to my first trip totally unprepared.
But here's the thing, I knew you and your intelligence level, and I knew that this would be something that you would be very, very good at, very proficient at, and so that's why I wanted to give you as few details as possible, especially passing all the tests and how challenging that was going to be initially. So I kind of
Guess she was right.
Yeah. All right. And here we are.
Let's move on to a different subject. Joe.
Yeah.
How's it different being an AP as a woman compared to being an AP as a man?
Well, that's its own podcast.
Well, assume you have 4.5 minutes.
Okay. I've never been a man, but I, you know, it's very different. Cards in general, I think more men tend to gravitate towards games that involve cards, not obviously not only, but generally. And I think being a woman, you subject yourself to different types of situations in the AP world than you would if you were a man. I have many stories. You know, there's a lot of...
How do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, you know, being in casinos, first of all, lends itself to a lot of
harassment.
Yeah, harassment. Thank you. And, you know, if you're there a lot, which you are, if you're an AP player, you're putting in the hours and you're grinding to get the results that you're looking for. You know, you're in a casino a lot, and then there's a lot of men who are around you. And so sometimes they try to take advantage of you, or they're interfering with your game, or, you know, I've been subjected to a lot of different types of harassment, but, you know, you just have to power through it and focus on what it is that you're doing. But it is very different. And it's also, I don't talk about it a lot. I haven't started talking about playing except to people that I do play with. This is very recent that I started discussing this because there's so much critique from people. So critique from women, critique from family, critique from like other individuals, like, oh, why would you do that? And there's such a lack of understanding of what goes into it. You know, oh, you're a gambler. And I just feel like it's just better to, you know, say nothing.
So this podcast is a bit of therapy you're going
through. Yeah, it's cathartic.
So, Rosanna, is your experience similar to that, or how is it different?
I think I can expand on what Joe was trying to say, because I've been thinking about this a lot, and it's not that I feel like as far as the team, both teams that I was on, one of the great things that I liked about playing blackjack was that it was women, you know, whether you're a woman, whether you're a man, whether you're tall, short, it didn't matter as long as you could pass the test and as long as you had the skills, you could play. And, you know, no one was really looked at differently, you know, whether they were man or woman and, oh, she's a woman, she can't play. But, I mean, we were all treated equally in terms of skill level. It was all very skill-based, which is what I loved about it. It was like you worked hard and you, as long as you're willing to put in the work and put in the hours, you could, you know, the sky was the limit. Exactly. It's a meritocracy. And the same with poker, which I started playing later. But the thing that Joe was trying to get at was that, you know, in the casino, you're there's advantages and disadvantages to being a woman. And one of the advantages is that you are sometimes underestimated by, you know, the floor people, the pit bosses, the dealers. It's more assumed sometimes, I guess, especially if you're younger, at least when I was playing, that, you know, you sit down at a table, you're betting the table minimum. A lot of times it was just assumed that you don't really know how to play. You know, you'd have guys at the table mansplaining, you know, basic strategy, or even just, you know, you want to stand
mansplaining.
That's a phenomenal term.
It's a term that it's true. You know, that it's like, oh, you don't want to hit on 17. You know, I mean, things like that are obvious. And in a way, you know, it was great because you're underestimated, you could use that opportunity to, you know, every time I need, you know, if I needed to stall the game for any reason and make sure I, for my teammate to come over, I could, you know, suddenly ask questions about my hand or basic strategy or, you know, what do you do here and what would you do and pull the whole table. And they don't mind explaining because, you know, everyone wants to help out the, you know, damsel kind of in distress. But at the same time, sometimes that could be a disadvantage because you're more, sometimes more memorable as sometimes you're the only woman in the casino, not the casino, but in the, at the table or in the high limit room. Later on when they're looking back at your play and they're seeing, okay, who was, you know, there was that guy in there betting thousands of dollars and, oh, that woman was always with him because they remembered you because you were the only woman in the room. And, you know, so sometimes it's harder to, because you can't really blend in as much when you're, you know, the only woman in the room and all the floor men are men and, you know, they just kind of pay more attention.
What about betting the money? Was it harder as a woman to bet the money?
You definitely have to have a better act than you would as a man, I think, because it's not expected. Again, what I was referring to was earlier, not within the team. We certainly weren't, you know, critiqued for being a woman on the team, but outside in the perception in the casino and by other people. So when you're betting high dollars like that, the attention is on you big time. And you have to have some form of an excuse almost and act like, why would you be doing such a thing?
Chinese.
Unless you're Chinese. Exactly. Yes.
No, it's true.
Yeah, because it's not normal. Like,
aren't you a mother? Do you have children that need this food? Or like, aren't you someone's wife? It's true. There's that discrimination within the casino and you have to have a really effective and plausible reason that you're betting all this money. So we were forced to be creative, which is great. So yes, there's definitely positive from it, but you better have a good reason.
For a long time when we were playing on our first team we were on, there weren't any women that were BPs, you know, that were the people that bet the money were never women. And that was
really not even the woman running the team.
It was, at the time that I played, it was already, there were certain people that had already kind of stopped playing. And there were certain people that, you know, in general, it wasn't a discrimination thing. It was just, as Joe said, you know, it's not as believable, especially when with the stakes that we were playing, you know, we were in our early 20s. It's just not as usual to see women betting that high amounts. And I understood that, and I didn't want to. And there was one point where I did end up betting the money in a situation. And that was, it was really exciting. And so I got more comfortable.
How high did you get to bet?
It was the maximum at that table wasn't very high. And so it was at a game in Reno that was very, it was kind of our last resort in town because we had situations all over town.
Situations.
So our normal VP got backed off everywhere. And there was, you know, a few, four or five of us in town, and everyone had, no one had a good name anywhere. And in our team, we didn't really use fake names at all. And so I was the only one left who had a name that would work. And it ended up working out.
How high did you bet?
I think the table max was either 1,000 or 2,000, but it was like two hands of table max, two or three hands.
Did it bother you at all to bet the money?
No, it was exciting because I was so used to it at that point, and I knew I could do it. It was just at that point I did have to kind of pull a sort of little bit of a crazy act, and I had a co-BP, you know, who was acting like my boyfriend, so it didn't seem like I was alone, and he had the money in his pocket and he was giving it to me as if I was just this gambling addict, and I, you know, was just demanding money from him, and he kind of didn't really want to watch and kept walking away. And so yeah, they believed it for a while until they didn't later on. So yeah, that's another story.
I just have to tell you my one woman card counter story. When I first got to town after college, I was a dealer, and I started dealing at the Golden Nugget downtown. And I was dealing to a middle-aged woman one day, and I realized she was counting cards. And she was the only person at the table, so I started talking to her. I was like, "How did you learn to count cards?" And she, most of the time when I would talk to card counters about card counting as the dealer, it kind of freaked them out. But she was just like an iceberg, like, "Oh, yeah, well, I got this book called Playing Blackjack as a Business." And we just started talking, right? So we're playing, you know, she's playing. And this boss comes up to me and he goes, you know, when bosses don't want the player to hear, they turn their back to the player and then talk into your ear. And he goes, "Deal to the last card." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Deal to the last card and then shuffle in the middle of the round and keep dealing that way all the way through the deck." I was like, "Okay." So he walks away. Nice. I say to her, "You're going to love this."
I've got some great news for you.
It's like the opposite of a backup.
All the way. It's a double deck, and I'm dealing, you know, there's a a plastic card on the bottom, and I'm dealing 103 cards and then shuffling, and we're talking and playing. And I come off the game when I go on break, and I go to the boss. I go, what was that about?" And he starts laughing, and he points at another boss, and he goes, "That guy thinks that woman is counting cards."
No. Are you serious?
I said, "Wow. Oh, yeah, that really, yeah, absolutely, that happened." I said, "Well, you showed him."
What did she say? Was she?
The woman?
Yeah, the
she
woman.
She was like, she couldn't believe it. I was like, yeah, sweet is right.
This is your day.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think there is sort of something we've talked about on the show a lot, racism, sexism, that can really be exploited.
You asked earlier about betting the money, and I love that story, Ro, about about that. You really owned it, and then it became a lot easier. I want to point out, I think, well, it seems like you weren't even shocked. You were ready to go the first time you did it. The first time I did it, I was shaking because so much of this is mental, the performance aspect. You know, you want to really believe what you're doing and you have to own it. And I didn't in the beginning. And I was extremely nervous to bet money. And then it just became something that, again, based on math, this is how much you bet. And you just have to own it. And I think there's so much application to the real world about just really owning what it is you're doing. And it became a lot easier. I think if you're with another individual where you're co-BPing, or you have this boyfriend or brother, whoever this male is next to you, it is a lot easier. But many times you're by yourself and you really have to have a solid story.
Well, and some people just can't do it. I mean, I've just run into people who just couldn't bet the money. You know, their hands would shake and they just never were able to get comfortable with it. So,
in video poker, it actually applies too, although you're generally there using your own money. I started out as a quarter player, and when I was betting dollars, $5 at a time, that was Nervous City. And then, you know, when I went up to $5, that was scary. And when I went up to $25, you know, that was scary. So every time you moved up, for me, it was scary. And then now, you know, only $25 coins, but no big deal.
Yeah.
But
That's definitely true of all the blackjack players I know. You ramp up and you get comfortable at a certain level. And
ramp up, what's that? It's just about separating yourself from the dollar amounts, I think.
Absolutely.
It's just making it, it's just chips and it's, I mean, it's not obviously just chips, but you have to think in units and in, you know, if you have the proper bankroll behind you, then you shouldn't have to worry about the money. And that's,
well, some people aren't worried about the money, especially on a team where it's not their money. They get worried about the heat.
Oh,
the
exactly.
more they bet, oh, the pit boss is going to look at me. Mm-hmm. You know, they see ghosts around every corner. And
one other thing on this topic, it got me thinking. There were two incidences that I can remember where I was by myself. One was in a Washington casino, and I was betting the money, and it was an incredibly scary situation because some of the other players were highly intoxicated. They pegged me for this very wealthy single woman, and they're, you know, harassing me, give me some money, and I had to call the pit in, and now there's attention on me when I don't want attention, you know. And it, there was another situation like that too, where they see you by yourself. And this is going back to your other question, what's it like to be a woman in gambling?
Uh-huh.
And if you have a ton of chips in front of you, and I try to take some back, and you do certain things to not have it all out there, obviously. But sometimes you're winning, which is great, and you know, you can't keep taking money back, and people will just come up to you. They see you're by yourself and they want to talk to you, which is of course distracting, but hopefully you can handle that aspect. But then they really can get very much in your face and
Plus, you have security issues.
Yeah,
right.
Security
leaving
issues.
The casino when they know you have all that money.
Right. The only time I felt unsafe having lots of money was definitely outside the casino or being seen leaving the casino. And not usually with the team, you always have people waiting for you and you have a meeting place. But it can definitely be scary, especially as a woman carrying large amounts of cash. I mean, that was my number one fear.
And carrying money, yeah.
Carrying the cash, and
that's a whole other thing. You can use it to your advantage, too, because, you know, the count drops, you want to move to another table, you're like, I'm being harassed, and then you can involve the pit. Can you make sure that guy doesn't talk to me over there? If he follows you and the count drops again, then it works out great. So you can use
these
things to
your advantage. Can I just
have my own advantage. Private game, please? Yeah, can I have my private game?
Dealt to the last card.
You're not cutting deep enough for me. Can you please?
One advantage that I think women have is I think it's easier for you to really change your appearance than it is for guys.
Well, see, I think the opposite is true.
Really?
Because we can't grow facial hair and...
Try.
And
but you can wear wigs.
You're great at this. You are.
No, I felt like I was terrible at this.
No, you felt, but you weren't.
I have one disguise story where I completely failed because
you
can wear wigs, but you can't really change your age that well especially as a younger woman. And I had gone through everything. I tried wigs of different color, and we had good wigs. They were all human hair, and they were, you know, I thought they were good. And but the when the facial recognition software comes in, it's like you can't really.
Nah, it's not facial recognition.
You can't really. Well, I don't know. Anyway, so I tried to dress myself as an older lady, like an older.
Meaning 24?
No, like older, like meaning over 50. I don't know what I was wearing this gray wig. Over 60. I don't know. I was wearing this gray wig, and I mean, I was a girl in my 20s, and I was wearing this like gray hair, and I. And I tried to, you know, paint wrinkles on my face, and I went
costume
and I
fail.
Put glasses on, and I thought, and I wore a shawl, and I was trying to be this little older lady. And at this point, I think I was, you know, just had been kicked out all over town, and I just wanted to play. And so they put me in this session, and I was this older lady, you know, I was trying to kind of hobble around and be very quiet and not talk. And so I went up to a table, I started playing, and almost immediately one of the pit bosses comes over and asked me, I need to see your ID. So clearly I did not pass for anyone even over 30, or they kind of knew I just looked suspicious because I'm
I had a friend one time who had heat all over town, and he got this gray wig and a gray beard, and he was wearing a hat, and he was sitting at the table, and a boss walked by and did a 180, and he looks at him and he goes, "Is that a fake beard?"
Oh,
and he goes, you know, he's busted, right? He goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Yeah, it looks like it." And turned around and just kept walking. Like, didn't recognize him at all. Just recognized that he was wearing a fake beard.
That's so funny. You know, I think costumes become essential in our line of business. I'm sure you both would agree. And so we
what
have
kind
to
of,
create.
What was your favorite costume, Joe?
I'm going to let Rosanna start with this because she had a really great one. And then, if you don't mind, then I'll
I don't
take
mind
over.
At all.
I don't like talking about this, but okay. So don't. No, I could say it. So it was, it wasn't supposed to look like a prostitute, but.
See why
all
I
great stories, all great stories begin with that line.
How often do you hear that?
it kind of turned out that way because I would just use my whatever clothes I had in my closet, and I had, you know, clothes that I wore out to nightclubs. So I wore, it was a leopard print short skirt, and then this little black top, and then I had this platinum blonde short wig, and I ended up going in and being part of, it was sort of a, we'd been all over town, and we were getting a lot of heat, and so to switch it up, instead of having the solo BP go out there, they thought, you know, we'll put him with a partner, with a lady, you know, and try to kind of distract the pit guys from, you know, what he's doing by, you know, having a cute girl on his arm. And so I definitely was trying to play up the, you know, young female act, and he was my partner, and I was basically controlling him. He was the BP, but I was, you know, we were taking call-ins together, and I was counting the cards and signaling him how to bet and everything. And I was kind of just this lady who he had picked up somewhere in the casino. And we ended up playing for a couple hours like that. And then, but it's almost like a better distraction to not blend in and to stand out, because they think that card counters are not going to want to be seen. And so sometimes, our team was kind of famous for this, was just putting out the most
hiding in plain sight,
outlandish, you know, out there disguises so that you look like you want attention. So then that means that clearly this person's not hiding, because they, you know, they're just so outlandishly dressed that they, you know, they want some other kind of attention. And so that was the whole plan. And it kind of worked. You know, I was getting attention, but not the kind that, you know, we didn't like. And then eventually they did figure out who we were, and it was because of me. And the reason I know this was because they were, you know, they backed him off. They were walking him to the cage, and they said to him, you know, they pulled him aside from me, and I heard this, and he said, you know, "Excuse me, sir, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know if you knew this woman before, you know, from before, or if you just met her here in Vegas, but, you know, she's a member of a really big card counting team. And, and I don't think you want to be involved in something like that." And this guy was the sweetest guy. He was very low key, very chill. And it was just dressed like a regular conference businessman. And I guess he convinced him so much on his act that they really thought, I don't know. that our part of our recruiting was just finding guys on the street. Hey, baby, you know, do you want to come and gamble with me? I don't know. But I thought it was so funny that they completely ignored me. I mean, even clearly they knew who I was, but they didn't even talk to me at all. They were just focused on him and trying to warn him that, you know, you don't want to be involved with these card counting people. You know?
Right. Like if it was a hooker, it'd be okay. Right. But don't get involved with those low life card counters.
It was hilarious. It was
so, really Joe, are you a better hooker than Rosanna is?
You know,
I've done that act.
Yeah, I did a little of that, not really, but the act of. And some of my favorite costumes, I had adult braces. So for real,
I did too.
Yeah, adult braces are great. You can put the rubber bands on the braces and nobody wants to talk to you because then the risk of having a rubber band shoot in your eye, in the person's eye, and it just looks like you don't want to talk. So I just put on a lot of rubber bands. So when they ask me questions, so that was, I think, my personal favorite. And I still laugh at that to this day. That was the best, you know, and so nobody wants to talk to you. You know, I tried being the business person with the briefcase. I think the briefcase is a little over the top because really, why would you bring your briefcase to the table? You experiment with different things, you know, the suits and, you know, then I think one of the best costumes is just to get in sweatpants and look as absolutely atrocious and sad as possible. I've played the despondent woman so many times and nobody wants to talk to you either.
And actually, you really blend in that way
too. I have a friend who likes that too. He likes to dress as like a homeless person and bet, you know, $5,000 a hand or whatever. Yeah.
Definitely had some of those
with
too.
Lots of absolutely. Money, they don't give a shit. You know, they'll dress however they want.
That's fantastic. And I think that does help you blend in. And not to keep going back to your initial question, but if you are a despondent woman putting out a ton of money, people will stay away from you too. It looks like maybe I would mumble something about my husband here and there. And yeah, I was a drunk, despondent woman with braces. Like literally nobody wanted to talk to me. It was, you know, it was a mess. I was going to use a bad word. It was a mess. So, yeah.
I gotta try that. I had trouble like keeping people from trying to talk to me because I'm naturally very kind of personable, and I try, you know, I'm friendly and I like people. And so that's one of the hardest things for me about being in a casino or trying to play a game and focus on it, because you have people just trying to chat with you just because they're, you know, they want to be social and what are you doing? Where are you from? And it's hard to sometimes remember, you know, what your story is or, you know, and then do all of that and you're counting cards and you're trying to keep track of your teammates and you're, you know, there's all this stuff going on, keep track of what's going on in the pit, and people are chatting like, oh, you know, so how do you like San Diego and, you know, or wherever you say you're from. So it's definitely an added level of distraction sometimes.
I want to point out that when you, I guess this isn't really a costume, but, you have the drunk thing happening. You're amazing at that. You do the best drunk act I've ever seen, honestly.
And well,
thank you. I've seen a lot of actual
I'm
drunk
a method
people.
Actress. I kind of do it.
You have to be. Theater training, really.
I train by getting lots of drinks in me. And
I just want to point out that this is a first, that we are doing this show with a bottle of wine. So,
oh, I didn't know if you were going to say anything.
Oh, yeah, no, and I think it's a great improvement in our normal shows.
See? You got to add this to all your shows. But, yeah, but you really do, Rosanna. You do an amazing, amazing drunk act. It's so convincing, honestly. It's important.
I actually don't know how I feel about this compliment anymore. Yeah. I make a convincing drunk.
One of the things that I used
is
to do.
Is it worse being a drunk than a slut?
I mean, how about a drunk slut?
I don't know. Yeah, I've been both before at once. Yeah, I don't know.
One of the things that I used to do that I thought was really effective was I would hold the drink on edge so that it looked like the liquid was about to pour out of the drink onto the table. And the dealers and the boss would get so fixated on watching the drink to make sure that I wasn't going to spill it all over the table.
That's brilliant.
Oh, I've definitely spilled drinks on tables on purpose before.
Well, I've done that too, but
that's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I like that idea. I like the almost spilling the drink, but I just go for the full spill. And especially if you have no ways left to stall, that's the perfect
or
spill
the big
drink
negative it count gives, that you want to get them to change.
Oh yeah,
the
get
cards
them to shuffle,
or,
just
or
spill it all
yeah.
over the cards. Oh, that's the best.
That, no. Yeah. But yeah, so I kind of digress, but we're talking about costumes, but you know, the whole act, I guess, in itself is a costume, and you do such a good job. I just had to acknowledge you publicly.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
All right, we're talking to Joe and Rosanna about their experience as AP blackjack players. We're going to take a brief commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about when they've been sexually harassed in the casino by teammates, other customers, and casino employees.
And Harvey Weinstein.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In November, the month-long promotion involves half-price Smith's $50 gift cards. Normally, $50 in cash or free play is earned by earning 16,667 points. In November, if you earn and redeem 8,334 points, you get the gift card. There's a limit of 10 gift cards per person for the month. On Thanksgiving Day, 320 players will earn $100 each in a hot seat promotion, where the money is given out approximately once every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Wheel Poker with Quick Quads. This is a 7 coins per line game where you get a wheel spin every time you get a 4 of a kind, a quad, or a quick quad, such as 4, 4, 4, 3, ace. Wheel spins are worth 157 coins on average and definitely influence the strategy. Next semester in the free video poker classes at the South Point, I'll be teaching the double-double bonus version of this game on Tuesday, January 21st. It is the first time I have ever taught this class. All right, we are back with Rosanna and Joe talking about their blackjack AP experiences. In the news recently, there have been many examples of men sexually harassing women, primarily in the fields of politics, media, and entertainment, but in other fields as well. Sexual discrimination has always been alive and well in Las Vegas. Playing on a blackjack team while being very pretty and sometimes pretending to be a hooker would seem to invite sexual harassment. Do any of you have stories in this regard? And if so, what happened and what did you do about it? Rosanna, you get to go first on this one.
Okay. So this is a continuation of that story that I told about being dressed sort of provocatively just to be the Kobe
Lady of the Night.
Yeah, the Lady of the Night, to be a Kobe P. So how that session ended, as we were at the cage, you know, my partner was cashing out, and it came to a point where they were asking for our IDs and trying to say, you're coming with us. And so we ended up separating. Well, basically, I kind of left him there because he had to cash out his chips, and I didn't want to go to any, and I checked in with him. I said, are you okay? He said, yes. And I just took off. And, cause I, you know, didn't want to be dragged anywhere. And they, you know, they let me go. They knew that I knew it was okay to leave. And so I was walking by myself in this outfit down the street of Las Vegas at night. And I was walking towards this other casino where I was going to meet my other teammates. And, you know, I started to become kind of aware of how I was dressed and, you know, trying to get there quickly. And I think it was summer, so I didn't even have a jacket or anything. And then this guy, I was on one of those overpasses, and this guy was walking straight towards me. And then he said something to me. I kind of looked at him, and we had eye contact. And I found out later, after watching some documentaries about this business, that if you make eye contact with a pimp, then that's like an invitation to, you know, that means that you're looking for help or something.
Life rules.
I didn't know person was a pimp, but he turned around immediately and started following me and started talking to me. He actually walked in step with me and he said, "Hey baby, are you working?" And so of course at first I thought, you know, okay, he thinks
how did he know I was a blackjack player?
I know, I was like, actually, yes, I'm kind of, you know, I'm on my way. So, I mean, I didn't want to say I am working. I've thought about that. Okay, I'm not. And then I was thinking, okay, this guy, I thought he was just, you know, looking for a good time, you know, one of those, like a customer and not. And so he kept walking with me. He said, "Hey, are you working?" And I said, "No, I'm going to meet some friends." You know, and then I found out later on, again, from the documentary, that once you start talking to them, that's also a sign that, you know, you're alone and you need a pimp, I guess. Anyway,
so didn't learn this at Stanford.
I didn't know. No, I learned later. So he kept
pimp
talking.
Pimp 101. It's a second semester course.
So I still didn't know for sure what he was after me. I mean, I knew. He said, you know, are you on this side of the street? Why are you on this side of the street? And then I realized that, you know, I was in his territory or something. And he was asking me, you know, what are you doing here? And why are you on this corner? And I said, I'm just going. Can I just go? I'm just, please leave me alone. And we were still walking at this point. And then I finally made it like ahead of him, even though I was wearing these super high heels, and he started calling after me. This is when I found out. I really realized that he was a pimp. He said, "Who's your daddy?"
It does not sound real.
I can verify. I can.
It's ridiculous. I love it.
So he literally shouted at me, "Who's your daddy?" And
did you ask him if he knew any other Toby Keith songs?
That's when I started running, and I started running in my high heels because I was almost at my location where I had to meet my people, and I was so scared. My heart was beating so fast. And he kept shouting at me. This is in front, you know, on Las Vegas Boulevard. He was like, "Who's your daddy?" And he said, "Speak his name or so-and-so is going to come after him." And I was like, oh, my goodness. It was scary. If I wasn't close to where I needed to be, I don't know what I would have done, like grabbed a stranger and told them to help. I mean, it was scary. It was the
Rosanna, this is a huge compliment.
It was the third scariest thing that happened to me. But it was actually the third scariest.
The best part of the story is that there's actually a one and a two.
It was definitely the third. So anyway, I was very close to where.
Richard, are you in the mood for the first two?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Can we have more wine, please? We might get the first two.
So I luckily, as I walked up to this corner where my friends were supposed to be, that their car pulled up at that moment somehow magically, and I was able to get in, and I could still see him behind me, and I was so scared, and I was like, go. It was like a movie. It was really intense.
Yeah.
So that's the only time I was sexually harassed, but I don't think it was in a casino, and it wasn't by anyone I actually worked with. But
that's a hard story to follow. That qualifies.
Give it your best, Joe.
Yeah, no, nothing like that. I want to just say also, running in heels. That's
I almost took them off. I didn't have time.
We've both run in heels. It's a real thing that it slows you down, the heels. It's not comfortable. It probably contributed to a little bit of my back issues. So it's a workman's comp claim. You know, and so that's a real thing. And we've both had to run in heels. I've literally darted out of casinos in heels before a number of times. So that's another disadvantage to the woman heel thing.
Yeah, I personally hate it when I have to run in heels, but continue.
Yes. Okay, so you're along lines of your question. So I actually had somebody screaming at me once, and they were like, I don't want to use the word, but they were calling me the word with a B, and because I had done a move like surrendering, and that's just ridiculous, and that messed up his hand, and he's like, "You're just a stupid woman," and then insert curse words here, and he ripped my wig off, which is another problem.
Wow. So I was at the table.
He didn't know I had a wig. Well, I mean, maybe it looked like a wig, but anyway, he got really angry. This is one of the stories. He was very drunk, belligerent, and he wanted to fight me, actually, and he like saw that. I don't know, it was also pretty scary. So it wasn't so much sexual harassment as just harassment in general, and I don't know if I would have had that harassment had I been you know, a man. But it was pretty crazy.
I made that harassment as a man. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I did change the flow of the cards. So, you know, it was justified.
Yeah, well, that's the whole story, changing the flow of the cards. I've gotten so many of those arguments, yeah. But, you know, I'm sure you have too.
I'm having trouble understanding the difference between the flow of the cards with a surrender versus standing. But I'm just,
yeah, because I should have hit. And that if I'd right. taken that card, then he wouldn't have had that card, you know, right. that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
well, but, of course. It's obvious.
Anyway, that's one form of harassment. I think you're specifically referring to sexual harassment. Okay. But I had to mention he grabbed my wig off. You know, like I mentioned earlier in this podcast, you know, there's been so many situations where you have a lot of money in front of you, You're dressed as whatever you're dressed as, and guys will just, you know, they're in Vegas to have a good time. They want you to come party with them. They see, this is another problem with being by yourself at the table and betting the money by yourself, because you must be bored or you must be lonely. So many assumptions go into why you're there. And so men come in, not all men, but sometimes they come in and try to save you. It's not always like, hey, baby, you're hot. It's like, oh no, you need me to save you, because they want to feel important. So come back with me to my room. You know, so many times there's been aggressive
people.
I'll walk you to your car. Just give me one of your chips and I'll do whatever you want. But, you know, and it's ranged from mildly suggestive to
yellow chips.
One of your yellows, please, specifically. Right. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's ranged from mildly suggestive to very, very assertive. And you have to do different things depending on how aggressive the people can come. So that's external people. But there's also been a couple instances where you have to act, you know, on the team, and maybe a team member, and this does not happen very often, but the team member maybe takes it a little bit, act too far. That's happened too.
Act too far, meaning a hand on your butt or your boob, something that level too far?
Yeah, something on that level.
Okay. That would be too far.
But, it, you know, it's not common, and it can happen at an office setting.
I may have sexually harassed a player in a casino in an attempt to get someone off a table that was sitting in a seat that we really wanted. I may have hit on a guy that I knew was definitely not gay in an attempt to get him to leave.
That's great. That's creative.
Because he was... He thought I was hitting on him.
Was he cute?
Oh, yeah.
But I get that, you know. Yeah. So I don't think that in my case...
We do what we have to do.
there wasn't a need for that extra step, I think. I think the act was convincing enough. So, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's things that have happened with the individuals at the casino that you don't know. That's a lot worse than any of the other stories that I might have, internal problems.
Now, you must have been backed off numerous times. Any that were particularly outrageous? Anywhere you felt physically threatened? Any, if you knew Bob Nersessian back then, would you have had a case?
Rosanna. Yes, I'm going to take this one first.
Rosanna,
yes. Sorry. So this was definitely, I definitely was backed off many times. And of course, some were very polite and professional. And that's actually what I found most in Vegas, actually. Mostly in Vegas, all my encounters were pretty, you know, cut and dry. I don't know how it is these days in Vegas, but most of them were just very, you know, sometimes they shake your hand and say, you know, sorry.
You're too good. We don't want
you're
your
too
action.
Good for us. Sometimes they were a little more aggressive and just like point at you, like, you out of here. And that happened to a whole session one time. They just went around pointing people out. That was interesting. But
did they get the right ones?
They got every single one of us. It was a particularly astute person who had been following us, I think, around. But in Reno was my worst, it was my only backroom experience ever. And it was pretty aggressive. And it was the one time that I was the BP. It was the first time I was the BP. And it was, I actually had a bunch of chips. They only had $500 chips. That was their highest denomination. And I had won like something like $40,000. And so I had all of these chips, and we ended our session and we were going to play the next day. And we actually, I had a room there with one of my teammates, and we ended up, you know, just going into the comped room, because I want to be seen leaving the casino after they gave us a comped room. So, you know, it was agreed we'd stay there. And I just took my chips upstairs with me because, you know, we're going to play again the next morning, roll out, already have my chips to play with, and it'd be fine. And so it was me and the guy who was playing my boyfriend. We ended up staying in that room. And after 5 or 6 hours, we're sleeping. It felt like the middle of the night, but it was about noon. We hear this bang, bang, bang on the door, and it was a bunch of casino security, and my partner, I'm going to call him Cliff, he opened the door, and then they just rolled in. There were 6 or 7 of them. They all running around the room, and, you know, we're still literally in our pajamas getting out of bed, and they, you know, they just running around with flashlights. They were looking. They thought all of our teammates were in there with us or something, and they were looking around and like, where are they? Where are they? And we're like, just us. And so then they said, you know, pack your things, you're out of here. And then, you know, of course we're playing the, you know, what did we do, what happened? And the guy, you know, they just said, you know what you did, you know. And they said, you know, you had a really good night at the tables, you know, we hear you win about $40,000. And they said, well, nobody wins that much playing blackjack.
It's a great line.
And we tried not to laugh, right? Like, nobody wins that much. And I was like, are you kidding me? You guys really, I mean.
I won $80,000 last week. What are you talking about?
Clearly they had nothing bigger than $500 chips. So clearly they, at their casino, no one had won that much. And so they were, you know, they were pretty pissed off, and, you know, we were packing our things. They actually had a person with a camera taking photos of us in that room. They were, you know, trying to get pictures of us like a paparazzi, and running, chasing after us. And we put our hats on and we were trying to escape them as we were packing our things.
It was, put your heels on?
Didn't put
with
my
your
heels
pajamas.
On.
Did you put your heels on?
Finally, somehow I got dressed. I don't know what happened. So we went downstairs, and this all really happened. We were all in the elevator together, and it was kind of awkward. And I was looking around, and
you
I,
and Cliff
it
and
was
six
me
security
and Cliff, guys. Yeah, all the security, and then the suit, the one in charge, and I said, you know, do you work for the casino? And he said, no, I'm a private investigator. And so I don't know. He worked for probably one of
Griffin
those
agent.
Griffin or one of those. And I'm like, okay, you really need some better hobbies. I don't know. It was just like, this was his thing. He wanted to bust in. So they escort us out, and we're at the valet, and they're trying to read us the trespass act. And then I remembered I had all those chips in my purse that I had to cash out. And in Reno, you can actually cash chips, they say, at any other casino in town. But I didn't know. I mean, there are $50,000 in chips. Are you going to take them next door to the, you know, Harrah's or whatever, you know, and just try to cash in? I mean, it seems like it might cause a bigger problem. So I tried to go back and cash them in. They said, no, you're 86. You can't go back inside. And so we just left. And then later on, I ended up coming back because we had to leave, you know, we had planes to catch the next day, and we didn't have time to, you know, go all over town, and we didn't want to show up with these chips somewhere else and get backed off there. And so it was agreed I would go back by myself and try to cash these chips. And because we knew legally they had to give me my money, you know, even if I was trespassed, you know, there was nothing that we could do. And so I planned, you know, I went in and I had the chips and pretty much like nothing else on me. And in my handbag, and I went in, and Cliff was kind of in there kind of observing, just to kind of be my backup in case anything happened. And of course, as I'm at the cage, and I see out of the corner of my eye all, you know, the security is gathering on the sides, and then the cashier is like pretending to count my chips, and I'm like, man, oh, what's gonna happen? And so
hurry up.
And I knew it was like, clearly she called them over because they were all waiting for me to come back. And so the security came, and there was like 7 of them, and they surrounded me, and they immediately put me in handcuffs, and they said, you know, you're coming with us and you're trespassing. And I mean, I couldn't do anything at that point. I couldn't fight, I couldn't resist. I mean, I'm, you know, 5'2" and maybe 100 pounds.
My favorite color is blue.
And so it's like, what am I gonna do? There's 8 security guards around me. And so I, you know, I kind of figured that they were gonna do whatever they're gonna do. And so they started walking me to the back room where they were taking me, I guess. And then we're almost to some door in the corner of the casino, and my friend and savior, Cliff, he jumps out of nowhere and like Superman, and
you always have people popping out of nowhere and save you.
He pops out of like seriously between two like out of between two banks of slot machines, and he says, he said, "What's going on? What's going on here?" And then they said, "No, no, no. It's none of your concern, you know, Mister." And he said, "No, no. This is my friend. Like, where are you taking her?" And they said, and they kind of looked at him, and the main guy, you know, looked at him and said, "Wait a minute. He's with her." And they asked him, you know, "Are you so and so?" Whatever fake name he was using. And he said, "Yeah. So what if I am?" And then, you know, they grabbed him and put him in handcuffs. And so he basically jumped out so he could join me. I mean, he knew that they were taking me, and he just didn't want me to be in there alone. So, yeah, they took us to the back room. They actually tied us down to these chairs that they had back there. So,
just you mean handcuffed you?
No, no, no. There was straps on the chairs, and there were straps on our feet.
Yes,
and she can verify it because Joe actually was in a room with. In a different casino with chairs that
and
people
also
are strapped
people, but
down.
That's, that'll be, yeah,
I feel 100%. Like this is a thing that a lot of casinos have. So yeah, we were in like the extra special back room with the crazy people chairs, and so they tied us down.
Once again, you can't learn this at Stanford.
And there was a one way mirror in front of us, and we were just sitting there next to each other. They left us in the room alone. They had made us leave our bags out in the outer room, and we just, you know, and I kept asking, you know, can I just get my money? Can I get my money and leave? And one of the guys said, "You'll get your money." And like, so they knew that they were going to give, they just wanted to be jerks, I guess. And so we were sitting in there for forever, it seemed, but I think it was a couple hours. And then.
What casino was this?
I don't
Why would you not want to say what horrible casino this was?
Well, I don't want to say because I'll tell you at the end.
Here's why I hope. Yeah. I hope you sued the shit out of them and there's a non-disclosure.
I wish I did, to be honest. But what happened was is that finally a bicycle cop comes in, and because that's, I guess, what they called the cops to issue us a trespassing citation. And so they... So the cop comes in and he gives us a citation and court date and yada yada. He didn't listen to anything that we had to say, of course. And then so later on, you know, I did talk on the phone to a lawyer. I think it was Bob Nersesian, actually.
It was.
I talked on the phone with a lawyer, and he said I did have a case, and we kind of decided against suing, which. To this day, I'm not sure if that was the best choice, but because I didn't want my name to be out, you know, when you have a court case, your name is published, you know, it's a court public record, I guess, and I just didn't, at that point in my blackjack world, I thought I could make more money playing blackjack than I could, you know, suing a casino. I didn't know, so I still don't know.
You could have done both.
I know, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't realize.
So, you know, she didn't know.
Okay.
So yeah, at the time, I was kind of advised against it, I was not advised against it, but I had the impression that I wouldn't be able to play much anymore after that. That I would at least not, you know, using my name and so I guess I just I just had higher hopes in terms of. Advantage play and thought that that it would kind of blacklist me from all the casinos because they would see my name and
James Grossjean, you know, sued gaming control, sued the police, sued the casinos. He still plays over 300 days a year. So,
but he doesn't. Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
But
yeah.
Not under the name James Grossjean.
No. But wait. So what happened? Did they then cash?
Oh yeah.
The chip?
So finally, so the cop came in. He issued us this trespassing warning, which is, I mean, it was the citation, and then they, you know, they gave me all my money, and I made sure it was all there, and then, and then we ended up leaving, and that was that. But
okay, so why is it you don't want to name the casino?
Oh, because part of the, I know it's really silly, but I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations is gone, but they. In order to, you know, drop the case, like they said that they would agree to drop the trespassing charge if I would agree not to ever, like, publish a story or talk about the incident.
But here you are speaking.
So I don't know how long like that statute of limitations goes. I don't know. I mean, I still haven't decided.
Okay,
whether
she doesn't want
the
to.
Name
That's
might
fine.
Appear in my book that I'm writing. So
okay. We're going to talk about that book in a second. So
wait, we skipped from the beginning. We jumped so far ahead. We never got to the original testing, what you guys
Oh, wait, I have a back-off story, though.
Wait.
Okay, well, let's stick with back-off.
Actually, so Richard, she has a back-off story, and then we're going to cut. And
get more wine?
And get more wine.
And then we're going to start a new show and have a
part
a new
two
episode.
Of the show.
So if you've liked this chaos, which I think you probably did, there's going to be another version of this showing up either next week or the week after, depending on when we post it.
Okay.
But, and that's when we're going to talk about their initial test. But, Joe, you have a back-off story.
So I think it's a crazy coincidence that we both have tied to chair stories, and we were not together. And it's true, and it's just absurd. But my story is a little bit less detailed. I have no problems mentioning the casino, but I want to make sure that's okay with you.
I mean, I wasn't there, so
okay. But I just want to make sure. So I was at Mandalay Bay, and this was in...
That doesn't sound like it was in Reno.
No. 2006 or roughly that time. And I was playing with teammates, obviously. And it was a very scary situation. This was the most aggressive back-off that I've ever experienced. But I saw security got one of our guys. And for some really strange reason that I don't know to this day, one of my teammates yelled my actual name and said, Joe, or the real name, it's over. But this was before they came to me. Now, I can't say for sure that they wouldn't have come to me anyway. It was just a very strange...
That's very weird.
Yeah, everything, you know, sort of went slow motion at that point. I was very scared because, I don't know, I just... The way it was very ominous, just the way it was happening and the fact that he yelled... He didn't do it with any malintent. It just... I think maybe he got nervous.
Panicked.
I think that people panic, you know, and... It's just interesting to see how people react in situations like this. And it's interesting to see how you yourself react when under such tremendous pressure. So the security came and they got us. They handcuffed every person. There was five of us in that session, except me. I didn't get handcuffed because of something I had whispered to the security. Why I whispered a medical reason why I couldn't be handcuffed. It wasn't true. But I said it with certainty, and I have this condition, and I just happen to know
a
variety of conditions.
That Joe is really good at talking herself out of situations that otherwise, I mean, I wish she was there with me when that happened. Somehow she would have been able to talk us out of it because
she talks pimp.
She's very, yeah, she could have talked the pimp out of that.
My daddy is.
No, but I mean.
Munchkin's my daddy.
I mean, we've had.
Oh, really?
I've seen this woman get out of speeding tickets by just talking and talking and talking and just somehow convincing.
In mentalism, they call it misdirection.
Yeah, just kind of making them just confused and bored and whatever. So anyways, whatever she did, she was the only person not handcuffed. That's pretty amazing.
You know, back to real world applications, if this should go on a resume, like what happens in when times of danger or adverse conditions. So I said I had a Raynaud's syndrome, which is a very rare disease, but you definitely don't want to have
it. Is it a real disease?
It is a real disease.
But how would a security guard even know what that was?
No, exactly. You throw in it, but see, you don't. There's a circulation issue with that, and your hands will literally go cold. And whatever.
I remember that for next time.
I said, with complete certainty, sir, I have a terrible disorder. And I was like whispering, and I said, it's Raynaud's syndrome. I'm currently under some experiment.
But why didn't you guys, could you guys not walk away?
If you handcuff me, that's going to, somehow, I basically scared him with some completely arbitrary medical condition. I was already looking panicked, but I had my hands out and I was looking at my wrists and I was like, spare me, kind sir. I will go with you. I will follow you, sir, but please don't. And, you know,
could you guys not walk away at that point? Were you in the back room?
Again, ridiculous. So that he was leading us like a pack of, anyway, we went down a hallway and down another hallway. And again, this is very out of a movie Like, but we went to a back room and they demanded ID and I did not surrender my ID. So I was very proud of myself for that decision because that would have impacted my future very significantly. And I was very proud at that point. I had managed to avoid giving ID a number, you wouldn't even believe how many times. And that was also an incident where I did not give up my ID. They tied everybody else to a chair. This was only 10 years ago, 11 years ago. It wasn't like this was back in, you know, 1820. I mean, they tied.
But the others didn't have Renaissance. Like,
they didn't have Renaissance.
With zip ties or they had
no zip ties.
The straps.
No zip
the straps
like
that
the
probably the same.
Chair where they strap you
listen,
in.
Yes.
With
I assure you
with
this
the
is
buckles
true.
And that was what happened to me.
Absolutely.
Buckles.
And they had six of them.
All five of them. Yeah. So maybe there's four because I was the fifth person. Anyway, every one of them was tied besides myself with the syndrome and it was scary. And so, you know, not to drag this on, but we eventually ended up going out an alley. You've been kicked out where you've exited through an alley or
I honestly don't remember
exit.
Because I was, yeah.
Yeah. And we got 86th and I mean the whole thing, but boy, that was a really scary story, but I was proud the way I handled it, I guess. And you know, it taught me
and
things for the future.
Did you guys sue?
So there was conversations that were had by individuals that were related to attorneys that came up with some form of a settlement. So
you got a settlement.
I wasn't part of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't part of that. But it was settled. Let's put it that way. Yeah. So yes.
Seems to me you should have paid, right?
Again,
they can't settle for you in your name without you getting some compensation.
I removed myself I just
want to say for our listeners, there was this idea years ago, exactly what Rosanna was talking about, that suing would somehow hurt your ability to play.
Yeah.
And it really hurt all players to believe that. Because it wasn't until players started suing that casinos started doing this kind of stuff less. Mm-hmm. And
right.
I don't know anyone who sued and then was not able to play. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't affect, I mean, you know, they don't read books on how to count cards. You think they're going to read public records on who sued them? You know what I mean?
Sometimes you just don't know, though.
You don't know it until you know it. But I'm hoping through this show, people will realize, don't be afraid to sue those SOBs because they deserve it.
That's definitely one of the few regrets I think that I have about playing blackjack. That I kind of wish that I would have thought harder and maybe got other opinions or something. And really, I think I had a really good case. Now that I read about things that happen to people and things that you know settlements that they have, I think I definitely could have gotten something.
And you could have used $100,000 if you had to.
Right. I mean, who can't?
Yeah.
All right.
No student loans.
This has been a lot of fun. This is part one of at least a two-parter. The way it's going, it might end up being a three-parter. I'm not sure. So
just come back every month for the next year.
So, Joe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rosanna, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Richard,
fun.
Thank you. And go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.